Thanks. It's a pleasure to be here with you today. I'm representing a team of people from not just from CSU, but also from the University of Wyoming, Hawassa University in Ethiopia, and Thin Air Nitrogen Solutions. And we've been working in two areas, both on developing a nitrogen fertilizer that could be made locally and a phosphorus one. And I'm going to tell you just a little about each of these in the short time we have. So first of all, Ethiopia is a beautiful land, but unfortunately, after thousands of years of cropping without returning nutrients back to that landscape, soil fertility has declined, and with that, then crop yields decline and malnutrition increases. So what options do Ethiopian farmers have to reverse this decline? One option is that they could buy urea and DAP, the fertilizers that are commonly available in Ethiopia. And Ethiopia now has a move to blend fertilizers that include potassium as well. Unfortunately, though, these fertilizers are too expensive for most smallholder farmers. Urea costs about three times what it costs here in the U.S. So another option would be composting, and most Ethiopian farmers do compost. But unfortunately, there's just not that much waste to go around, so that composting really can't meet the need and reverse this soil fertility decline. Another option would be manure. But manure has another very important use in Ethiopia, and that is that it's used as cooking fuel. And because of that demand, there's just not that much manure left to go back to the land. So we're developing a new option that uses cyanobacteria that we cultured from local soils. So cyanobacteria are really a very amazing organism, and they were previously called blue-green algae, and they photosynthesize like plants. But they also have specialized cells. Let me see if I can point to a few here with this pointer. There are specialized cells like this one. They're larger cells. They're called heterocysts. And that's where nitrogen fixation occurs. And so the photosynthetic cells capture the energy from the sun and then transfer it to those heterocysts where the energy is used to fix nitrogen. We're growing the cyanobacteria in shallow ponds that we call raceways because they look kind of like a racetrack. We use a paddle wheel to make that water go around, and we feed in important nutrients for nitrogen fixation, like phosphorus, iron, and molybdenum. And we grow the cyanobacteria in batches that can be harvested about every 2 weeks. The cyanobacterial fertilizer can be used either as a liquid or in dry form. In the U.S., we've used the liquid form to pump directly through drip irrigation and micro-sprinkler systems, and not had any problems with clogging. However, in Ethiopia, most farmers don't have access to irrigation, so we focus more on the solid cyanobacteria. Fortunately, the cyanobacteria settle. When you stop moving the water around with the paddle wheel, they settle, and you can pump the water off and start a new pond. So you're recycling the water and the nutrients in the water and inoculating a new pond at the same time, and then the cyanobacteria can just be left to air dry and be swept up. And that's what you see here in the slide. So we've carried out a number of greenhouse trials at Hawassa University using both of those forms of cyanobacteria in comparison to urea. And I'm proud to say each of these three men you see in the picture here finished master's degrees at Hawassa University working on this project. And each of them is now a faculty member at one of the new universities in Ethiopia. So that's an exciting part of this project as well. So now let's take a look at some of these yield results. This is from a pot study. And so what you can see here, the control is in that light green. And then the light orange is urea treatments. The little bit darker is the dry cyanos, and then the darkest color is the liquid cyanos. All of them are applied at the same nitrogen rate for each crop, using the government recommended nitrogen rate. So what you can see here, if you take a look at the kale, first of all, the urea and the dry cyanos yielded equally well. And if you take a look at maize, you see the same trend. And then in the chili peppers, you see the dry cyanos actually led to higher yields, significantly higher yields than the urea. We're not only interested in yield, but also in the nutritional quality of the crops. And so what you see here is beta-carotene concentrations. Beta-carotene is a precursor to vitamin A. And this was in two follow-up greenhouse studies using lettuce and tomato. We also decided to add another treatment, and that was the compost treatment. So you can see here the beta-carotene levels in the control that had received no fertilizer at all were the lowest. And then urea significantly increased from there. Compost significantly increased above that. And then the cyanobacteria were significantly higher than those treatments, especially the solid cyanobacteria treatment. So you can see from these brief results that the cyanobacterial fertilizer made in Ethiopia can result in yields that are similar to or greater than those achieved with urea and have some nutritional benefits as well. So now let's shift gears and think about phosphorus. Ethiopia has the largest livestock population of any country in Africa. And so thinking about phosphorus, my question was, what happens to the bones? And could we make a bone meal from the leftover bones? So we did a little researching here to figure out, is there something else going on with the bones? And what we found was that in most cases, abattoirs in cities, towns, and even in the village level end up with bone piles that have no further use. So our idea was, can we harvest those bones and grind them up and use them as a phosphorus fertilizer? And that's what we did. So I'm going to show you some results from a greenhouse trial at Hawassa University. We used two different soil types, a clay soil that was slightly acidic and a sandy loam that had a pH of 8. We grew two different crops, maize and common bean, and then we treated that bone meal a few different ways. We ground it and then we sieved it with a regular 2-millimeter sieve, commonly used for soils, and separated the bone meal into two fractions, the coarse fraction that did not go through the sieve and the fine fraction that did go through the sieve. And then knowing that bone meal is not very soluble at high pHs or even neutral pHs, we added an acidification treatment and by acidifying for three different periods of time. And I'll tell you more about that in a moment. Our control was, we had two controls really, the no phosphorus control and a DAP treatment for comparison. Of course, the DAP also has nitrogen in it, so we used urea to even out the nitrogen application across treatments. Here you can see the greenhouse trial being set up and then towards the end before harvest. First, let's take a look at the particle size effects on the soil test values. So what you see here is the Olson soil test P on the y-axis and the two different soil types and three different grinds, either the control of light green, the coarse grind of yellow, and the fine ground of orange. So you can see that just applying bone meal did not have an effect on soil test P, and it didn't really matter if it was coarsely ground or finely ground. It didn't dissolve and influence soil test P. And then, with no surprise, there was also no effect on the biomass of the plants. So let's move on to the acidification step. When we started thinking about, well, what could we find around here that would help us to acidify bone meal? I'm really committed to using locally available materials whenever we can. And so my student came up with this great idea to use coffee wastewater, which has a pH of about 4.4. So since Ethiopia is the homeland of coffee, coffee wastewater is not too hard to find, and that's what we used. And we used different shaking times, being unsure how much acidification we really needed. So we had no time at all, and no acidification, 24 hours of acidification and 72 hours. Now we can take a look at the soil test P values that you can see here. So as no surprise, the DAP significantly increased soil test P over the control. And then let's take a look at the coarsely ground bone meal. The one that was not acidified was not different from the control, but acidifying either for 24 or 72 hours significantly increased soil test P to the same levels as the DAP. And it didn't matter if the bone meal was coarsely or finely ground. Now let's take a look at biomass yield. The results are similar, but a little bit different. So you can see, of course, that DAP significantly increased the yield. And the coarsely ground bone meal, the 24-hour acidification did not significantly increase that yield, but the 72-hour did significantly increase it to the same levels as DAP. And when you look at the finely ground portion of the bone meal, the results are a little different in that 24 hours of acidification were adequate to achieve the same yield as DAP. So you're probably thinking, well, but how many bones are there in Ethiopia, right? Well, fortunately, just earlier this year, a paper came out with that Johannes Lehmann was one of the co-authors on, and they quantified specifically how much bone was available in Ethiopia for this. And they estimated that there is enough harvesting of livestock in Ethiopia to provide about 50% of the DAP that is currently used in country. So there, it's not an inconsequential amount of bones, okay? And that doesn't even include all the bones that have built up over many years. So one of the biggest constraints to fertilizer distribution and use in Ethiopia and many countries is the transportation step. Ethiopia is a landlocked country, and therefore the fertilizer has to come in through the port in Djibouti and then come over land to Ethiopia and then out to the countryside. Transportation is estimated to cost about 7 times what it costs here. And of course, this is often over poor roads, or in the last part over, you know, no real roads. So that was what motivated us to see, could we develop locally produced fertilizers and skip this transportation step, or at least minimize it? And our results today show that by doing that, we may be able to produce fertilizers that are more affordable than urea and DAP and are equally effective, and even sometimes have benefits in nutritional quality. Thanks for your attention.
Our speakers are really great. They save time. We have one question. Oh, my God. I can see a lot of that.
Okay. I'm very interested in the economic side of things. Could you possibly be specific of the cost difference between the DAP and then the
right. Actually, we need to scale up to be able to get good numbers. You know, is that what we've done on a small scale, there will be economic benefits as we scale up, that there should be substantial savings. We've also played around a bit with materials to try to make things as cheaply as possible. So I guess I can't give you specific numbers off the top of my head, but just know that we're committed to making this cheaply as possible and figuring out the best way to do it.
Very nice. Well, I know it's a very interesting topic again. I should be around for...